Here's a time check. Springbok Radio time is 8:30.
Harry!
Oh, yes, Albert?
It's no good you standing there. Go on, get busy. We haven't got all day. You don't think I'm going to clean the blooming up myself, do you?
All right, keep your hair on. Just testing a cradle.
Well, hurry up!
Keep your hair on, cheeky little swine. Whatever she says, he's going. No, I'm not going to be the laughing stock of the neighborhood. God, the muck they get on these winners is past belief.
Haven't you started yet?
I've got to make sure the hooks are on properly. I suppose it would please you if the cradle slipped and I went early down below, wouldn't it?
It'd be no loss of...
No!
It's time for you to take your place on the jury as Bristol-Myers, makers of new Volt toothpaste, invite you to... consider your verdict.
My lord, gentlemen of the jury, the woman you see in the dock hardly appears to be the type of person who would plan to destroy the life of her husband. Yet it is our submission that that is precisely what she did do. Although she failed in her ultimate object, the results of a diabolical act will be seen when we call upon her unfortunate husband to testify. Look at the benign appearance of the prisoner with her grey hair, twinkling blue eyes, fresh complexion. And then you'll ask yourselves, is it possible that this woman, Phyllis Mullins, could cause her husband to become crippled for life? A paraplegic whose broken spine means that he will need constant attendance for as long as he lives? You, sitting there, whose onerous task it will be to pass verdict on this woman, will seek from the Crown a justification for this charge of attempted murder. We'll want to know whether Mrs. Mullins had motive, opportunity. The answer is yes, motive. You will hear evidence that this middle-aged woman was so besotted, so infatuated with a 28-year-old assistant of her husband's, that she attempted to do away with what she considered the one obstacle acting as an impediment, Albert Mullins. Incredible, you might say. No, gentlemen of the jury. A glance through the records of these courts and page after page will tell of the desperate lengths resorted to by middle-aged and elderly women in order to satisfy their lust for men much younger than themselves. It is common cause that on January the 27th, 1968, Mr. Albert Mullins, who owns a window cleaning business, was engaged in cleaning the windows of a block of offices situated at Montrose Street in the town of Guildford.
Lord, you know this room. It's a junkyard.
Never mind that. Get all those grappling irons. I want to finish this lock today.
Oh, we'll finish it, but you don't have to go on riding me all the time. I've told you it ain't true what Fred Barr said in the
front. True or not, you watch your step, young man. You sure she's firmly fixed that grating?
Yeah, that's it, you know, all right. Give your hand over.
Righto. Now the pail.
Hey, careful, don't tip the water.
Here are the cloths.
Right. Right, now you go over there and start on that lot. I'll fix the cradle.
All right.
However, the windows of the top story of Majestic Building were not destined to be cleaned that morning. For as Mr. Mullins went about his task of washing the first window, the rope holding the cradle upon which he was standing snapped, and the unfortunate window cleaner was sent hurtling to the pavement below. You will hear medical evidence that will say that Albert Mullins' injuries were so severe was to make his present existence on Earth almost a miracle. Miracle or not, this unfortunate gentleman, innocent of all wrongdoings, a decent, hard-working artisan, will suffer pain, discomfort, and an incapacity to do the things that normal human beings can do without any hope of recovery. With the court permission, we shall hear Albert Mullins' own story as he's wheeled into the courtroom. Mr. Mullins, it was made clear to you that no one can force you to give evidence against your wife.
No, I want to give evidence. I want her to suffer as I've been made to suffer.
I didn't do it, Albert. Honest, I didn't.
Don't give me that.
My Excellency, Court.
This trial will be conducted in an atmosphere that is expected of a British court of law. The solemnity of the proceedings will be respected by all participants. Now you, madam, being indicted on this terrible charge, will be given full opportunity to protest and to demonstrate your innocence. I do not wish to hear any further outbursts from any quarter.
My client is somewhat overwrought, my lord. I apologize on her behalf.
My lord, I'm
Let us not pursue this matter any further. The matter is considered closed. Are you in a position to conduct your examination, Mr. Heathcliff?
I am, lord.
Good. And you, Mr. Mullins? Are you sufficiently comfortable to be able to withstand the rigors of examination?
I'm all right, my lord.
Oh. Then please let the trial proceed without neglect or hindrance.
As you know, to please it. Mr. Mullins, I want to refer to that terrible morning. I know you've been asked these questions many times, but it is necessary for you to reply to them again for the benefit of the jury. Now, will you explain the procedure when you set off to commence your duties? You were commissioned to clean the windows of a building known as the Majestic.
Yes.
What happened? I assume that you get all your paraphernalia ready before.
That's right. Well, my assistant comes round.
By assistant, and... you're referring to someone named Harry Sneasby?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, aren't these?
Well, young Harry usually calls around about 8:30 in the morning. And we load up the tackle and goes off on the job.
You say load up the tackle. By that you mean ropes, pulleys, cradles, ladders and so on?
That's right, sir.
Cleaning the top windows of Majestic Building would mean that you were working many feet above the pavement.
Oh, yes, the building's 12 stories high.
Therefore, safety must be an important consideration in your preparations.
Well, very much so.
When do you test your equipment? On the job, as it were, or before you depart?
I always do it at night. Saves time in the morning.
Where?
Well, I keep my equipment in my garage. It's been specially built to keep the station wagon, the ladders, the lot.
And ropes?
Yes, sir, and the ropes.
Thank you. Now, sir, you met with your terrible mishap on the morning of January the 27th, is that right?
That's right, sir.
When did you test your equipment, especially your ropes?
The night before.
You sure about this?
Well, I'm positive.
You examined and tested the ropes thoroughly?
Thoroughly. There was nothing wrong with those ropes when I tested them. I always get everything ready after supper. Means there's no time wasted in the mornings.
Now, all this tackle on view here in the court belongs to you. You were given an opportunity to examine the exhibits before they were brought into court.
Yes.
Hand over that rope, please.
Thank you.
Now, Mr. Mullins, this is a section of the rope that snapped. You know that it was cut in two and then joined together by insulating tape on which were glued strands of rope.
Unbelievable, isn't it? They showed me the rope when I was in hospital.
Such camouflage must have taken quite a considerable time. Now, Mr. Mullins, you're absolutely certain that when you prepared your material to load onto your van the following morning, all the ropes were in good order.
I'm certain of it.
I want to refer to the night, or rather the early morning of January the 27th, 1968. You were awakened, were you not?
Yes, I heard a strange noise in the backyard. And then I noticed that my missus wasn't in bed. What on earth's that? You awake, love? Eh? Hey? Well, that's funny.
Who's there? Oh, it's you. What on earth are you doing down there? Sleepwalking or something?
Oh, it's all right, dear. Go back to bed. I
thought I heard somebody trying to get at the van.
Come back up and you'll catch a death of cold. Hey, why didn't you wake me?
Woke you? You're a snoring fit to wake the neighbourhood.
Got back into the bedroom. I asked the missus if there were signs of anyone trying to break in, and she said no. It must have been a cat or a dog. Upset the dust, didn't it?
Thank you. What happened just prior to the rope snapping? There were cradles, were there not?
Yes, sir. You see, we took all our stuff up to the roof, and then Harry Sneesby and me, we fixed the two cradles to do the top floor windows first. We sits on them cradles, then we lifts ourselves down to the next floor with a kind of pulley. Well, I hadn't been cleaning more than a few seconds before... Well, I had a sensation of falling, and I didn't remember anything else. When I came to, they told me I'd been in hospital 5 days, and that my spinal cord was damaged. 75 fractures I had.
Terrifying experience, Mr. Mullins. Now, may we go back to the day when you were made aware of the gossip concerning your wife and Harry Sneesby? You were in a public house, were you not?
Yes, I'd called in at the Surrey Arms. A fellow that runs it's a great pal of mine. There was nobody in the bar except the two of us. And he says to me...
Oh, but look, I know you're going to tell me to mind my own business. I mean, you might even want to punch me on the nose, but...
Oh, what's the matter with you? You've been drinking all your profits away, Fred.
No, I'm sober, Albert. Look, I talked it over with the missus. She says I'm a fool to interfere.
Huh?
Oh, you and I have been friends for far too long. Now, I can't stand all this sniggering, laughing at you behind your back.
What are you trying to say?
Harry Sneesby.
Why should people laugh at me because of Harry Sneesby?
Phyllis?
Oh, no. She's old enough to be his mother.
Look, I'm going to give it to you straight over. Look, I don't blame the boy. But you should watch her when you're not around.
Not around?
While you were away at Liverpool, there was in here every night.
Well, I know that. Phyllis told me. Well, I mean to say... Look, you don't... You're not trying to tell me that while I was in Liverpool attending my mother's funeral and things... Oh, no, I can't believe it.
Look, it wasn't only then. I mean, how about the number of times he's taken her to the cinema and things?
But it was at my suggestion. You know I don't like going to the pictures. And he, living alone as he does... Fred, if you weren't my pal, I'd...
What, hit me over the head with a beer bottle? Tell me to mind my own business? Why don't you ask Phyllis?
All right. I will. I wish you hadn't said this, Fred. I don't believe it. I wish you hadn't said it. Rotten lot of gossipers. That's what they are, all of them.
And did you discuss it with your wife?
Yes. I told her that Guildford was filled with a lot of old washerwomen of both sexes, and that she had to be careful the way she acted towards Harry. I didn't want to be made a laughing stock.
Laughing stock? Albert Mullins, if you're going to listen to a lot of tittle-tattle...
I can't help it, can I?
Oh, you don't know how different things have been since Harry went to work for you. I love that boy. He's like the son we never had. And I'm not going to let a lot of nosy Parker spoil things for us. You ought to know better listening to such tales. You ought to be ashamed of yourself.
Well, I was ashamed a bit. She made me promise not to say anything to Harry. But I had to break my promise because he spoke to me. He said he was going to leave. I was talking to Fred in the pub when he came in.
Pint a mile, please, Fred.
Pint, right.
I want to see her at 8 o'clock tomorrow.
8 o'clock, Harry? Means we have to make an early start. You know, we've got that contract for the town hall. We need extra help next month.
Easy, man.
Thanks. I wasn't going to mention it this evening, but I won't be here next month.
Eh?
I was going to give him a notice tomorrow. I decided to go back to London to work.
Yeah. Well, you know best, but why? Aren't you happy with your wages?
Mrs. Mullins told me what you said. Told me what Fred said, too.
She's not going to like it. She'll say that...
Never mind what Phyllis will say. You're doing the right thing, Harry.
Now, I don't know what it's got to do with you. See you tomorrow.
drained his drink and walked out.
And then what happened?
Well, my missus hit the roof. I then asked him if he wouldn't change his mind. He said, all right, he'd stay on.
Thank you. No more questions. My lord, Mr. Mullins' nurse is making signs that it's time for him to receive his injection. May this be effected before cross-examination?
The judge agrees to a halt in the proceedings while the prosecution's chief witness receives medical attention. A dramatic moment in this trial, in which Mrs. Phyllis Mullins is charged with attempted murder and causing bodily injury to her husband. We take this opportunity to remind you that Consider Your Verdict is brought to you by Bristol-Myers. And now, back to the courtroom. Mr. Albert Mullins has returned in his wheelchair, which is placed next to the witness stand. Defense counsel rises to cross-examine.
Mr. Mullins, how long have you been married?
We was married on the 3rd of April, 1942, just before I went in the army.
Thank you. That means you'll be married for 27 years.
That's right.
Have you ever doubted your wife's loyalty and fidelity?
No.
Never? Not even when your friend the publican pointed out that you, your wife, and my client were subjects of malicious gossip?
No, never.
Somebody cut that rope and camouflaged it so that it appeared intact when you placed it in the van. Can you really, in your heart of hearts, see your wife acting so fiendishly?
I don't know. It's all so confusing.
Mr. Mullins, your window washing material was kept in the garage alongside your van, correct?
Correct.
And was the garage door locked?
No.
So anybody could have entered your garage and tampered with the rope?
I suppose so.
Your wife readily admitted she had developed a love for the man who came to work as your assistant. That he took the place of the son you both wanted but never had.
Yes.
Can you see your wife indulging in a carnal relationship with this 28-year-old, someone nearly half her age? An unfair question. Let me carry on. Mr. Mullins, until the police came to visit you in hospital, did you think for one single second that your wife had planned your death?
No. When they came and told me their suspicions...
Their suspicions. Not yours, Mr. Mullins.
Yes.
Mr. Mullins, I won't prolong your ordeal any further. That is all.
I now call Mr. Harold Sneasby.
Mr. Sneasby, were you having an affair with the prisoner at the bar?
Well, sir, were you?
I wouldn't call it an affair, no.
What would you describe it as?
Well, sir, at first I thought it was a bit of a lark. You know, she began to love me like. Where's the governor?
He won't be long, dear. He's just gone up the road to get some baccy. He said for you to wait. Sit down here, dear.
Oh, thanks.
He won't be back for about half an hour, because he said he was looking in at the Surrey Arms. He said you could join him there if you like. But, this is the first time I've had an opportunity of having a proper chat, like. Oh, you know, you're so like my nephew Cecil that was killed in the war. Oh, dear.
What is it, Mrs. Mullins?
You've got stains all down your tie. Now, you take it off, and I'll see if I can get them out for you. Haven't you got any parents, brothers or sisters?
Oh, yeah, but I left home as soon as I could.
Don't you get on together?
Well, it's not that. It's just that I like my independence.
Oh, of course. I can see you're a young man with spirit. Well, I'm sure you're going to be happy working for Albert. And I want you to look on me as... Well, just regard this home as your own.
Well, sir, as I say, it was useful to have someone to look after your laundry and darn your socks, that sort of thing, so I began to chat her up, like.
Chat her up? What do you mean by that?
Well, pretend I thought, I used to compliment her when she came from the hairdressers, that sort of thing. But I never dressed...
Just a moment, Mr. Sneasby, I'm coming to that. When did you first realise that your relationship with Mrs. Mullins was a subject for local gossip?
Oh, it was about a fortnight before the accident. You see, Mr. Mullins had gone to give a quotation for some window cleaning and Phyllis invited me in for some tea.
Another cup, dear?
No, thank you, Mrs. Mullins.
Oh, now what's this? You've not been listening to all that gossip, have you? Mrs. Mullins, indeed.
What do you mean, gossip?
Oh, we've been calling each other Phyllis and Annie for months now. Who's been talking to you? as Albert.
Talking to me? Well, it didn't just seem right calling you Phyllis in your own house, like.
Oh, now, Harry, dear, we mustn't keep secrets from each other, must we? I suppose it's that rotten Fred Barnes. He's mind his own business. All he's done is upset Albert. Oh, but you don't need to worry, dear. I've been able to hide our true feelings for each other. Albert doesn't suspect a thing.
Oh, what's he to suspect? Listen, Mrs. Mullins, Phyllis, you can't mean... it's crazy. You're a married woman.
I respect your principles, really I do. But I know what a battle it's been for you, for both of us. No, don't say anything. Tell me this. If I were free, would you want me for your very own?
But you're not. You're not. I must go. It was then that I decided to give notice.
Was it not you who examined the window cleaning equipment immediately after the accident?
Yes, it was. You could see where it had been cut through. I showed it to the policeman.
Thank you. That's all.
Mr. Sneasby, the Crown solicitor gave us access to the statements you made to the police authorities. My client swears that your entire account of taking tea with Mrs. Mullins, in which she declared affection for you, is a figment of your imagination.
I can't help that.
She will further declare that due to some devious, twisted reasoning on your part, you chose to distort or misunderstand the actions of a woman trying to be nice to a young man without his friends or family. Was she not nice to you?
I didn't say she wasn't.
You realize, of course, Mr. Sneasby, that anyone could have crept into that garage and arranged that rope, do you not?
It's not for me to say whether I could or I couldn't.
Assuming my client is found innocent of this terrible charge, the question remains that once suspicion is diverted from Mrs. Mullins...
Mr. Garnside, you will apologize to the court for a wanton disregard for the rules of procedure relating to the cross-examination of a witness. You will also apologize to Mr. Sneasby for an insinuation which is shocking in its import. Now, if you do not, I shall suspend the trial and hold you for contempt.
I apologize, my lord, and to the bench, the jury, and to this witness. I seem to have implied more than I meant the court to infer. I merely wish to say
that... Never mind your wishes. If you wish to continue, you may do so. But please, look to your line of questioning.
My lord. Mr. Sneasby, two cradles were used on the morning of the accident.
Yes?
Was there any previous understanding between you and your employer as to who uses which cradle and rope?
Not an understanding, no.
You don't seem very sure.
Well, Mr. Mullins always goes first, and then I hands him his pail of water and the cleaning material.
I see. And who hands you yours?
I does it myself.
Mr. Sneasby, think back. Are you sure that on every occasion when you and Mr. Mullins worked together from the top of a building, your employer went onto the cradle first?
I can only think of once when Mr. Mullins remembered something he had to do, and I started the windows.
So there was a chance that you could have stepped onto that platform and been sent crashing to the ground below.
Yes, I suppose so.
Yet, you have suggested that Mrs. Mullins was in love with you.
That's what she said.
So much in love with you as to risk your life. All right, Mr. Sneasby, that is all.
That closes the case for the Crown, my lord.
Defense?
My lord, what witnesses can I bring to rebut such vague and devious innuendos? For a time, I thought to put my client in the witness box. But what could she say other than she did not cut that rope? I would suggest...
Mr. Garnside, you know perfectly well that this is not the moment to address the court. I take it you have no witnesses you wish to call?
No, my lord.
Then, Mr. Heathcliff, perhaps you would care to commence your summation.
You have seen the mangled, misshapen body of Mr. Mullins. The terrible results that stemmed from the tampering of the rope. Only one person had the opportunity. That strange, lovesick woman, now on charge.
for attempting to murder her husband.
What motive had my client? The Crown admits that Sneasby had no intention of becoming emotionally involved with a woman twice his age. Oh, yes, somebody cut that rope. But can you, in your heart of hearts, solemnly declare that you're sure, positively sure, it was Mrs. Mullins?
Well, you've heard all the relevant facts. What is your verdict? Would you say that the attempted murder of Mr. Albert Mullins by Mrs. Mullins was deliberate? In a moment or two, we shall give you the verdict recorded in the actual trial on which this dramatic presentation is based. Well, what was your verdict? In the actual trial on which this dramatic presentation is based, the jury found that Mrs. Phyllis Mullins was guilty of the attempted murder of her husband, Albert Mullins.
Bristol Myers, makers of new Volt toothpaste, hope you enjoyed tonight's presentation of Consider Your Verdict, produced by Michael Silver. On Friday evening at 8:30, you're invited to listen to Medical File, another great dramatic series also brought to you by Bristol Myers. So, goodbye until next Tuesday, when it will be time once again to take your place on the jury of... Consider Your Verdict.